Well, familiar text this time from the Gospel of Luke this Palm Sunday. When Jesus had come near Bethphage and Bethany, at the place called the Mount of Olives, he sent two of the disciples, saying, "Go into the village ahead of you, and as you enter it, you will find there a colt that has never been ridden. Untie it and bring it here. If anyone asks you, 'Why are you untying it?' just say this: 'The Lord needs it.'" So those who were sent departed and found it as he had told them. As they were untying the colt, its owners asked them, "Why are you untying the colt?" And they said, "The Lord needs it." Then they brought it to Jesus. After throwing their cloaks on the colt, they set Jesus on it. As he rode along, people kept spreading their cloaks on the road. As he was now approaching the path down from the Mount of Olives, the whole multitude of the disciples began to praise God joyfully with a loud voice for all the deeds of power they had seen, saying, "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord, peace in heaven and glory in the highest heaven." Now some of the Pharisees in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, order your disciples to stop." And he answered, "I tell you, if these were silent, the stones would shout out." May God bless this reading and hearing of this holy word. Some of you may know the book, Mountains Beyond Mountains, written by Tracy Kidder. It's a biography of a man named Paul Farmer. Farmer grew up in rural poverty in the South, but went on to attend Duke University and then Harvard Medical School. Today he divides his time between Harvard, where he teaches, and Central Haiti, where he operates a hospital. In the book, there is a moment when Farmer is reflecting on the dilemma of living such a divided life. Teaching at a place like Harvard, where everyone is successful, and practicing medicine in Haiti, where most everyone is desperate. He recalls when an emaciated young man was flown from Haiti to Boston for emergency surgery, funds provided by Farmer's nonprofit organization. But in spite of everyone's heroic efforts, the young man died. Some of Farmer's own staff members questioned if this was an appropriate use of so much money, about $20,000, when the man's condition was so grave. Could the money have been better spent? Reflecting on that question, Farmer said, "There are so many ways of asking that question. For example, why didn't the airline that makes money pay for the flight? That's a way of asking it. Or how about this? How about if I said that I've fought my whole life, fought for my whole life, one long defeat? How about that? How about if I said that it all adds up to a long defeat? I have fought the long defeat and have brought other people on to fight the long defeat, and I'm not going to stop just because we keep losing. I actually think sometimes we may win. I'm not complaining. You know, people from our background, we're used to being on the victory team. And actually, what we're trying to do here in Haiti is to make common cause with the losers. Those are two very different things. We want to be on the winning team, But at the risk of turning our backs on the losers, it's not worth it. So you fight the long defeat. The long defeat. You know, that's not really a bad description of many of my fishing trips, to tell you the truth. But it actually comes from Farmer's favorite book, The Lord of the Rings Trilogy. Early on, the elfin queen, Galadriel, says, "Through the ages of the world, we have fought the long defeat." And Galadriel, of course, springs from the imagination, the vivid imagination of J.R.R. Tolkien, who once wrote, "I'm a Christian, so I do not expect history to be anything but a long defeat, though it contains some samples or glimpses of victory." Which leads me to wonder, and we discussed it in our Bible study this morning, what exactly are we doing in our Palm Sunday celebration? Are the palms and parade, the music and the hosannas, simply expressions of our engagement in a cause, a struggle, which ultimately is a long defeat? If only we didn't know. This whole day, this celebration, this worship would be so much easier if we just didn't know where it was headed. If we just didn't know about a cross on a hill. Makes this day seem just a little premature, doesn't it? Celebration just a little early. You know, it's kind of like when you have a few warm days in spring, kind of like today. People begin thinking about planting their gardens. They go out, prepare the soil, put in those tender tomato plants. Then we have a cold night. Run out the next day to scrape off the frost. See if anything survived. Sometimes it might be better just to wait and see. Not risk defeat. You know, I actually said this to the father of the prodigal son. You remember when that irresponsible kid came home, father ran down the road to meet him, grabbed him, kissed him, sobbed with joy over the boy's return, threw that big party, called in all the neighbors, partied till the wee hours of the morning. Well, you know, I took the old man aside and I said to him, "How do you know the boy will stay? He might get a good night's sleep, change his shirt, grab some food, be gone again tomorrow. Maybe you should take a little time. You know, put him on a short leash, kind of a 30-day probation. Then have your party. You don't want to be premature here. You don't want all this to add up to just another defeat. Sometimes it's better just to wait and see, not get too excited, too committed, don't want to jump into something too early. Don't risk a defeat. Is Palm Sunday just too premature?" You know, I confess that more often than I like, the Bible tells me things I really don't want to know. For example, Luke, bless his little heart, has told us three times where this parade is going. This parade is not going to end up in Ives Park with music and food and a big rally. This parade is not going to end up with Jesus being lifted up on the people's shoulders and proclaimed as king. Oh, he's going to be lifted up all right on a cross. Not once, but three times Luke tells us this. Luke, not exactly the life of the party, you might say here. If only we didn't know. But we do know. I don't know, maybe I should have stopped the choir's procession today. Hold it. Stop the music. Do you people have any idea where this is going? This isn't a parade. It's a funeral procession. You ought to know. Otherwise, we're just setting ourselves up for another long defeat. Pastor writes, I know someone who runs a clinic for indigent patients in downtown Birmingham, Alabama. She trained at one of the finest medical schools in the country. Could have gone anywhere she wanted to go. Had a lucrative career in medicine. But she said, I feel called to work among the poor. Those not served by the present healthcare apparatus. By the time she gets most of her patients, they're so badly diseased, so malnourished, that they're terminal and don't have long to live. She works 10-hour days, has been assaulted twice at the clinic. And in spite of all of her hard work and long hours, there are still so many she must turn away. Why does she do this? Is she just resigned to defeat? Or could it be? This is crazy, but could it be that she actually believes that the unemployed, unarmed, homeless rabbi who bounces this day into Jerusalem is none other than the truth about God, the key to what is really going on in our world? Could it be that the one who rides by is actually reaching out to all of us in a costly embrace? Is determined to bring close all those who are at a distance? Who is daring to live and die for a vision of the world, of true life, that is radically different from anything we have ever heard or seen before? Could it be? You know, walking with someone like that just might be worth it. No matter what lies ahead. As Mother Teresa once said, every act of love is an act of peace, no matter how small. A Fred Craddock story, which gently makes a similar point. I saw two little girls playing with a balloon, a red balloon that had been inflated with helium. It would float up to the ceiling. They'd grab the string and pull it down. They'd pull it down, then take turns letting it loose. They were having a wonderful time with that balloon, laughing, giggling. What struck me, however, was that this was happening in the lobby of a hospital. In over 200 rooms, there was pain and suffering and anxiety and grief. And in the lobby, two little girls were laughing and playing with a balloon. You think I should have said to them, what's the matter with you? Don't you know this is a hospital? Should I have said that? Should we say to the doctor in Birmingham, what's the matter with you? Why do you bother? Don't you know that most of your patients are going to die no matter what you do? Should I have said to the choir this morning, what's the matter with you people? How can you celebrate knowing where this parade is going? Palms in church, balloons in hospitals. What's the matter with us? Crazy Christians. I don't know. Maybe it's crazy. Maybe we dare to sing and dance and wave our palms, even on the way to the cross. Because when we look up and see the one riding by on that beast of burden, we truly do see our only glory and our only hope. Maybe we dare to sing and dance and wave our palms because the love that rides by on the way to the cross is the very love of God. the love of God for creation, the love of God for us, a love which we will discover has no limits, not even the limit of death. Just another chapter in the story of our long defeat, perhaps. But hang in there. Like Paul Farmer, dare to continue to fight the good fight, to celebrate anyway. Don't turn your back. Because, well, in the words of theologian Rebecca Chopp, on Palm Sunday, a window opens quickly for us to see something higher and better and more beautiful than the troubled ways of this world. A window through which we see God as the one who rides with us into a new city. Like all scriptures, the Palm Sunday story names something about our journey of faith. It says that amid struggle, anguish, denial, and forgetfulness, we have a wild and soaring anticipation, a vision of a new way, a glimpse of a new world. On this day, before our struggle with the coming week, let our longings give rise to new words of anticipation, our imaginations birth new images of human flourishing. Our hands, arms, and legs dance. Our voices cry out for the triumph of human hope and godly grace. Even in the face of what seems like defeat after defeat after defeat, how can we turn our backs on a hope like that? Don Schilling didn't. James Farmer doesn't. That doctor in Birmingham doesn't. Jesus of Nazareth certainly doesn't. Hopefully, neither do we. Embrace the hope. Blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord. Amen.